Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations, where we talk about mental health, adversity, spirituality, and societal issues. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia. And in this week's soulful episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, I dive deep into the world of music, its therapeutic powers, and the incredible work of my guest, Rick Delarada, with Jazz for Peace. Music has always been a universal language that transcends boundaries and heals the human spirit. In this episode, sitting down with renowned musician and humanitarian Rick to explore the profound connection between music and mental health was truly an honor. And Rick was kind enough to do a unique piece for us at the beginning of the episode, which I would encourage you to also check out. Rick is a talented jazz pianist and vocalist and the founder of Jazz for Peace. This remarkable initiative combines the magic of jazz with the power of philanthropy. Rick has traveled the world through Jazz for Peace, using music as a force for positive change, promoting peace, and aiding humanitarian causes. Tune in as we discuss the therapeutic effects of music, its ability to alleviate stress, anxiety, and depression, and how it can be a beacon of hope for those struggling with mental health challenges. Rick shares personal stories and experiences that highlight the transformative impact of music on individuals and communities alike. Discover how Jazz for Peace has harnessed the universal appeal of jazz to support various charitable projects, aiding communities in need, and spreading a message of unity and compassion. This episode promises to be a harmonious blend of inspiration and insight as we explore how music can heal minds and transform lives. Join us for a heartfelt conversation that will remind you of the incredible power of music and its ability to bring peace to the world and solace to the soul. Rick Delarada is now considered by many to be one of the finest singer pianists performing today and one of only a handful of jazz artists who can make a successful musical presentation to a large audience without having to abandon the true art form of jazz. Through his lifelong endeavor to help advance people to their highest potential through understanding jazz and spreading peace worldwide through his Jazz for Peace World Tour, Rick Delarada is considered an innovator and a visionary. Dr. Billy Taylor put Rick's impact in perspective when commenting on Rick's thought-provoking CD. He said, "Rick Delarada is one of the people who's taking jazz to the next level." I really hope you get a lot out of this episode. And if you, at the end, you could leave a 5-star review or a comment in the comment section, I would truly appreciate it. And a brief word for our sponsors. So I would like to talk about deodorants because I'm tired of constantly replenishing my deodorant and then having to worry about disposing those plastic containers. There's a solution for that. Wild. Wild provides a eco-friendly, all-natural deodorant with a sustainable design. They provide a for-life aluminum case. For me, they sent me a personalized case with my name on it. And did I mention you can customize your orders and have these refills delivered straight to your door? This is an all-natural solution where there's no aluminum in the product, just in the case. Go to wearewild.com and use code EASY at checkout for 25% off your first order. All right, Rick, welcome to the Easy Conversations podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I'm really excited about the conversation we're going to take. But at the same time, I think we're going to have a different approach to kicking off this episode, more different than I've had in the past. So I'll hand it over to you to introduce yourself, but I think you have something for me and the listeners today.
I do. My name is Rick Delarada. For those of you who are just seeing me for the first time, and I'm the founder of Jazz for Peace. I'm delighted to be with Furkan in Montreal because it was actually reminding me of the coldest gig I ever played in the city of Montreal. Maybe he'll ask me about that over the to open this up, I'm going to start out with you. Basically, it's a free improvisation, and it's a Sunday for all of you to know the day that this is being recorded. I don't know what day it'll be released, but it's going to lead into the free improvisation is something I call free JA, and it's going to lead us into an old jazz standard recorded by Etta James originally. It's called A Sunday Kind of Love.
Show me the way, but
Oh, that was great. Thank you, Rick.
My pleasure.
Yeah, no, that was a very unique way to start the podcast for me, but I really enjoyed it. So thank you so much. And we'll just kind of get into it. Let the listeners know a little bit about your story and who you are.
Yeah, so, I don't know where I should start. I mean, I could go, I could go back to birth or when I started playing or when I formed Jazz for Peace. I mean, do you have a point of reference you want me to take it from? Or
let's get into what led you to starting Jazz for Peace and what's your story behind that?
Okay, so that takes us at least a few decades into it. You know, basically I started playing music, you know, as a kid, like many other kids, and it just evolved from there. Of course, I ended up, you know, really just I felt like music chose me, so I never really even thought twice about becoming a musician. And once I became a musician, you know, I studied at New England Conservatory. I traveled a lot. One of the places I used to travel from Boston was to Montreal. I don't know how far back you go, but there used to be a jazz club in Montreal called the Upstairs, and it was a very cool place. And I used to just one of all kinds of gigs that I used to do. But this was before Jazz for Peace. The many different types of gigs all around the world as a sideman and as a leader. But this was one where I took a train or a bus or something. And I'm trying to think if it was either from New York or Boston, but it was somewhere in that time. And I would go up to Montreal. There was a bass player up there named Skip Crummy Bay, old-time bass player. Had a lot of history, played with many of the jazz greats. And we'd have an amazing time in Montreal. And I just remembered it was the coldest gig I ever played. We got up one day to play a gig at this place called the Upstairs. And it was like in double digits below zero. I don't know if it was 60 below, felt like 60 below, could have been 40 below. But it was way beyond anything I'd ever played. And I just thought, okay, we'll figure out a way to get to this. The car wouldn't start. We couldn't get, you know, it was unbelievable, everything you can imagine. And I figured, we'll get there, you know, there'll be nobody there, of course. You know, it was packed. We got there, the place was packed, because it was the first time I realized that, you know, in Montreal, at least at that time, hopefully still today, they don't care about that stuff. You know, others. I'm telling you, there'd be like everybody, oh, we can't go out in the cold, you know, not Montreal. Yeah. The place was like, and everyone just acted like it was normal. Nobody, we didn't even speak about the weather. I thought we'd all be talking about how, you know, and it was only me that, you know, was totally like discombobulated because I never experienced cold like that. Anyway, so all this traveling leads up to Jazz for Peace, where basically it was a crazy situation where I ended up on a rooftop of the building that I was in, less than a quarter of a mile away where I was living in the Lower East Side on 9/11. I had been tipped off by a woman who had taken pictures of me the day before. She was down on Wall Street, and she just, you know, made a spontaneous call to me like, you know, she, like, hey, I'm so sorry. I don't know what to say. I mean, we spent time yesterday. You came to mind. I mean, she was all frazzled. I said, what's going on? And I said, well, listen, let me go up on the roof of my building and just see what the heck all this motion is. You know, at that time, the only thing I could think was some idiot with a stupid glider plane crashed, you know, really a dumb decision or I wasn't thinking anything on a level that, you know, it turned out to be.
Right.
And I went up on the roof and saw everything. And the only words that came, the only response I had from someone, I mean, how do you respond to that in the first place? You know, I don't know. But the only response I had were words, and the words just came out. I wrote them down on a piece of paper. And after 9/11, or the day of 9/11 was over, all I had was a piece of paper with some words on it, a poem that I had called Jazz for Peace.
Mm.
And the rest is pretty much history, because
yeah.
from that poem came this and this and this and this, you know, starting with, you know, the reciting of that poem, which was a few weeks later down in Savannah, Georgia, at a jazz festival where I happened to be the headliner. So I was in front of 8,500 people reciting a poem. And, you know, I was on a podcast yesterday. I was laughing. I said, you know, too bad, you know, Edgar Allan Poe never had an opportunity like this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, you read about them, the tortured lives of artists, right? And the great poets, right? They can't get anybody to read their stuff until after they die. Then everyone realizes they're a genius. You know, here I am. I'm not a poet. I'm a lyricist. But this is my first, probably the first poem and only poem I ever wrote, for all I know. You know, I'm not, I mean, I write, you know, mainly words to music. These were just words, and I didn't really feel like I wrote them. I felt like gave birth to them, you know,
yeah.
like my water broke on that day or something, you know, my verbal water, whatever you want to call it. So yeah. I read the poem, and, you know, that resonated, of course. And it resonated all the way back up to upstate New York, where my next concert was. And again, that was another high profile gig. And those promoters were like, hey, we heard about this poem. And are you going to put that to music for our show? You know, it was like planting the seed in me for that. And the next thing you know, that article comes out. Del Rana starts out concert with Jazz for Peace is the title of the articles that came out after that. And even before that, there was an article. And that was where the guy asked me to recite the poem that I had read that he was about. And then he just were just, you know, shooting the shit is what they would say, you know. And I'm just talking back and forth. And I just happened to say to him, I said, you know, because he's just letting me talk. And I said, you know, we would just fill our souls up with all of the great qualities that we are known for as a species. So I said, if we would just fill our souls up with, you know, intelligence and creativity and artistry and individuality and all these great qualities, if we were all to do that, we would have a better chance at avoiding the behavior that leads to destruction. And I said it off the top of my head. I would have never remembered I said it, except years later, I start seeing it on all of these famous quotes websites that I didn't even know existed either.
Yeah.
But if you type in my name, famous quote, you see hundreds of web in every language all over the world just went viral. This quote that I said that's now a famous quote. And it's inspired me to go to these websites and see my quote, but with all the other quotes, and learn about all these great people who made those quotes. And it's a pretty amazing collection of people on these famous quotes websites. But anyway, that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've got, you know, this is kind of, what are you going to do next? You know, next was to do some concerts around New York City with Jazz for Peace concerts. And then maybe, you know, like, well, when I do some concerts to support some outstanding causes, you know, there's probably at least 15 or 20 of them in New York City, unbeknownst to me, not knowing there were over 60,000 nonprofit organizations in New York alone. So I didn't, you know, I didn't know. And it was just stumbling onto these things. And I had asked my manager, you know, why don't you call over the United Nations and just tell them who I am and that I want to do a concert bringing Israeli, Palestinian, and American jazz musicians together. So anyway, sort of things start happening. And then, you know, one thing just leads to another. Again, I find out that there's so many outstanding causes, and we could solve a lot of our problems just by identifying the really true dedicated ones, the people that want to achieve their goal and solve these problems, and they dedicate their lives to it. And there are people like that. And if we could help them, they, you know, help those who are helping others, who knows what, you know, we could accomplish, because these people are so dedicated. You know, you meet people, I'm sure, in your life who are dedicated to what they do. You yourself as a podcaster, you know, you can't just take anybody and do what you do. You have to take someone who has a, you know, a passion for it. And same with this, all these problems, it's crazy. There are people that have a passion for solving them, but they need to be, you know, kind of separating the wheat from the chaff, bringing these people to the forefront, because not all of them, you know, it's not really who you know in that world, it's who you are.
Yeah.
it just took a life of its own all the way to here we are today.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that story. And just for the benefit of myself or even the listeners, what was so powerful about that poem that resonated with people? And do you feel like there was something that came to you that was inspiring in that moment as you were writing that poem that kind of was able to manifest itself and appeal to a larger audience from that perspective?
This poem basically summed up everything that I had learned and gathered from traveling around the world and being a musician and seeing for my very own eyes. You know, we're easily gaslit in this world. Mm-hmm. People are, subliminal messages are coming in and making us think things that we kind of know are not true. Yet we still, we still find ourselves, you know what I mean? We have to catch ourselves. Hey, wait a minute. I know better than that. You know, you couldn't convince me after all the travels. I knew in a undeniable state that music, you know, crosses all of these boundaries. And, really anything that is dividing us as a species can be basically bridged by the arts and culture. And you know what? If you want to see the gaslighting of the universe, just look around you now, because you see all these problems in the world and all these people trying to fight them and say this and that and this party and that party. How many of them even mention the arts and culture? That's like having Michael Jordan on your basketball team and just leaving him on the bench, and throwing those other guys out. That's what we're doing as a species by we're not including the arts and culture. The arts and culture is a key ingredient. I will go on the record. You are not going to solve these problems until you bring in the arts and culture. And you know, there's an incredible movie that was made, I think, back in the 1970s in Tibet. And if anybody ever gets to see that, it's amazing. It's called The Song of the Weeping Camel. Yeah. And this is a story about a guy in Tibet. I don't know what he was filming when he started out, but he's with this family. The family has a camel. They have camels. And the camel has a baby camel. And because the baby camel is an albino, the mother will not accept the baby camel. Mm. And here's a problem like we have today, where we can't accept each other for the most ridiculous reasons, to be honest. Yeah. We can't come together for the most ridiculous reasons. We have these absurd things dividing us, keeping us divided. Same situation here, where these people in Tibet, you know, they need this. They, you know, they can't really, you know, this, you know, they need these things to be successful. This birth of a camel, this needs to work for the mother, for the kid, and for their family and for them, because the camel's an integral part of what they do. So they've got a situation like we've got all around, like we're surrounded by. They try, and this guy's filming it, and I'm telling you, these people try everything in the book, like we're doing. We're trying this, and we're trying that, and we're the green energy, and blah, 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 all these things, right? They're trying everything in the book, and the most amazing thing is, 3/4 of the way through this film, they look at each other and say, that's it. We got to go get the musician.
Right.
That's what they say, and it's being translated, and you're watching like, shit, go get the, what do they mean by that?
Yeah.
They get on a camel themselves and they go 3.5 days to find this freaking musician, because they don't have, you know, there's no cell phones in these days and all that. They got to find on a camel. They go and find this guy, and this guy follows him with the camera all the way in some other part of Nepal. There's no cars. There's just, you know, they're driving a donkey, however they're doing it. They're traveling on a, I don't know if it's a camel, it could be a donkey, but anyway, they're on an animal traveling to find this guy. Then they got to bring this guy 3 days back. They say, hey, we ran, and they meet the guy too. We tried everything. We're so sorry. We can't, you know, we're all out of bullets here. You got to get in. We got to get you up here. They get this guy up there, and he brings musical instruments, and he puts a musical instrument on the mother camel, and he has another thing. They're resonating, and then they bring the two camels together, and he plays a violin, and he plays, and he plays, and I mean, for hours, until finally the mother camel breaks down weeping. I mean, buckets of tears.
Yeah.
She breaks down. She accepts the camel. It's a done job. They pay the musician. and off we go. And that's the problem we're having here. Until we bring in the arts and culture and people like that, how long does this world want to wait? Do they want to, at what point are they going to turn around and say, enough already, let's bring in the arts and culture and the peace that, because this goes all the way back in history. We've never solved these problems without the arts and culture. We've never done it. And now we're trying to do it. How stupid is that?
That's definitely a valid point. And I think part of the reason to what you bringing up here is, with arts and music, it does bring people together because you're not really speaking about anything else, right? You're sharing a common language here that's unspoken in a way, and it can easily break a lot of those barriers that you're alluding to, and hopefully through that, get rid of that divide. And you see that in concerts as well, where you're not really cognizant of the person next to you, their political views or their religious views. You're all there sharing that experience. And that's why I think music is powerful. There's another aspect to music that I do want to talk to you about, is the aspect of storytelling. And, as artists, my understanding, I don't play a whole lot of musical instruments, but there is a way of telling a story. And, even the piece you played at the beginning of this episode, there was a story behind there. Why do you think music is so powerful in being able to express a story or just expression in general, including some of the work you do?
Well, if I can remember the words that I wrote that day, that might help. I the words that came out of me that day were, I hear jazz for peace coming through trees, and in my heart it fills me like a celebration. I see the light, and I want to follow, inspired by the past contributions of those who came before and laid the groundwork for us to build on in this universal language that is gift for all mankind. Mm-hmm. And when we speak it, people are enlightened by the creativity and artistry that stands for peace and love and humanity and intelligence that leads to reaching potential that we have in our souls ultimately, I think the rest of the words are, as we come to the realization that the gift of giving is our greatest privilege. Mm-hmm. I hear peace. So basically, that poem is trying to say that, here in this world where we think, the greatest thing we can do is use up all of our natural resources and take and, blah, blah, pollute and do all these crazy things, a situation where you have a document called the corporate document that actually is an invasive species because it was actually created for the private sector to protect parks and, historic landmarks, to protect those for the people. Here it is. It's taken in to where it doesn't belong, and it's used to protect profiteers from liability. Mm-hmm. So there you have a mistake right there. That's a mistake. And so, we have this situation, and ultimately, when all is said and done, it's what can we offer that fills up our spirit and helps the world in the best possible way? Really comes down to what we can offer and helping the world that enriches us, because all of these things that we're chasing, it's like that, there's that thing, I forgot, it's called the fisherman, the guy in the boat or something. And it's this little cartoon where, this rich guy is vacationing. He comes out, he sees a guy in a boat catching a fish. He says, what are you doing? He says, well, I went out and caught some fish. Oh, wow. Well, what you need to do is do this and franchise and blah, 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 and he takes through this whole thing about how he takes his fishing boat public and he makes millions of dollars and he piles up. And the guy said, oh, okay, all right, that sounds interesting. 20 years. But you'll have no stock prices and all that. Great. He said, well, what do I do after that? And the guy said, well, after that, you can go and live in a little village and take your little boat out. He tells him he can do what he's already doing.
Right.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, it comes down to We have to put our ego aside and our politics aside, you know. I mean, the crazy thing is for me to learn this, I've had to travel all over the world. All of my journeys are documented, which is why we got onto this free improvisation, because people who knew who I was, they said, you know what, I just want to hear you. What would happen if you sat down and played something? I said, I could do that. Like, what makes you think of that? They said, because, you know, you've been to the origin of the Nile River to help indigenous people. You've been to the south of India. You've been to Nepal, Haiti, you know, all these places, Africa 9 times, you know, all these places that you've been. Who knows what's going to come out when you just sit down and play something? And yeah. So that started this piece, which I call Free JA, because it comes from a term called free jazz in the 1960s, was kind of known, some great pioneers of that music. And there was a loft scene in New York where these guys would get together and spontaneously improvise. But I was in Haiti, and there was a big sign that said, "Welcome Jazz for Peace, J-A-S-S. So jazz is a Creole word. It's spelled J-A-S-S. And Haitians, basically, they came from Ghana, where I also did a concert, saw the slave castles, over to Haiti, and then from there to New Orleans, where they're the ones who were listening to jazz evolve.
Right.
You know, because as I said this on a recent podcast, too, when a music is evolving, you know, from its root origins, you're not getting socialites coming to listen to it. You know what I mean? The people, you know, the people who just happen to be around are hearing it. And it was Haitian, it called it jazz. So anyway, it's, no one knows it's J, the real word is J-A-S-S, so I don't have the S's. But of course, J-A-Z-Z is misspelled. Took that off. Now I have Free J-A, something I stand for with Jazz for Peace. And that is freedom of speech, which is being, you know, which you're having issues with right now. Freedom of people to... reporters to do their job, if they're, you know, if they have integrity, to be able to report on what they see in an honest fashion, you know, like that, you know, and preserving some of the rights that are under siege right now of people. So, you know, I've been able to do that on every single podcast. We're all up to, and some performances in places like Nigeria and here in New York. So we're up to over 50 performances of this piece, Free JA, that you heard today.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. And so, you know, you're talking about there is that form of creative expression that can bring people together. But there's the other side of it too, right? Where you alluded to a lot of the subliminal messaging and perhaps even control over people's speech or their expression in that sense. So there could be control of creative expression as well. But do you feel like even with music, you can kind of have some of that negative messaging, perhaps? Like, I just think about lyrics or certain types of music as well that can turn people against each other just through some of that hidden messaging.
Absolutely, 100%. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because, you know, music is used. I mean, for many years, I was used as an alcohol salesman because people would pay me money.
Yeah,
the piano bar and sing everybody's favorite song. And, you know, I would do that because I had a gig. I was making money. They send a tip jar around. I'd get tips. You know, it was great for me to develop as a vocalist and an entertainer and working with a crowd. And all of that was good. But every now and then I'd see someone order like 15 shots on a platter, bring them over to a table, you know. And the bartender was looking at me like they're looking at him. Now they think I'm good
because,
you know, they're selling all this out. And it's just, you know, so sad because I'm like, these people are ruining their night. They're drunk enough already. And now they're ordering. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm not
benefiting them at this point. You know what I mean? They're like, this is going to be a disaster for them trying to go to work in the morning or whatever. You know what
for
I mean?
Sure.
So all of that is true, 100%. So that's why, because of all that, Furkan, what we have is an empowerment tree fundraising model that goes with the music. So we have a world-class musical presentation. And what Jazz for Peace offers is twofold. Number one, it's a world-class cultural event at no cost to you. So now you're not getting, you know, I'm not going to come out and sell alcohol to you on my, you know, at the Jazz or Beast concert. We're going to get an honest, we're going to get honesty like you just saw, like you just saw when I played, you know, for better or worse, you know, because I didn't know what was going to happen. I could fall on my face, but you're going to get, you know, you're going to get a world-class cultural event in that form because, you know, that's what we're known for. So you're going to get what we've been doing. And also, I mean, why would I do any less? Why would I, you know, why would I throw dirt in this water? You know what I mean? I've got to cut something here. So why mess it up? I mean, it's hard enough just to get to a point where you can deliver something in, you know, in the idiom of your expertise. So you get world-class social events. But the second thing you get, which is extremely important, I'd say it's more important, is the staffing, the expertise, and the guidance from Jazz for Peace and our 20 years and 850 event experience to make that event a success. And when I say success, I don't mean in somebody else's eyes. I mean for you, because you're an outstanding cause or project or whatever. You need a whole bunch of basic things. You need, you know, you need more funds, but that's only one piece of the puzzle. And that's where we're also gaslit. Somehow, we're in some crazy idea where we believe that you can throw money at a problem and solve it. Look at all the money we throw at these wars, and what does this solve? Nothing. They want more, even more money the next time. A few months later, they want, and they're in the billions. You can't solve anything by throwing money at it.
Right.
But what you can do is you can use money, can just be one piece of a puzzle, and if you do everything in the puzzle, now you're advancing in a sustainable way and in a way that can help you for years to come. So some of the things we do, and it's all based out of a tree. So if you visualize a tree, you'll understand Jazz for Peace. The person makes a comment to Jazz for Peace, basically looks at our program. He has, you know, an outstanding cause or a charity, gives us a comment. That's a seedling. Okay. Now we take that seedling, his comment, and we put it in a little one page so that he can explain to his volunteers and his staff member, his board, his supporters, whoever he wants, group of people, what it is that Jazz for Peace wants to achieve for his organization. Now he receives comments from those people who he shows that little one page to that has his comment on it. Okay.
Right.
Now we've got a whole list of comments, which is really a VIP list. These people get to be VIP guests of honor at the event. They get the red carpet treatment. Now we have from comment to roots. Now you see that all these other comments now represent roots of a tree. Well, to grow a redwood like we would hope to do, we want to expand these roots. So now while we're rewarding these core people, we're getting them, hey, why don't you take the list? You take the list, show it to some of your friends, show it to some people so we can get people who you've been wanting to be a part of this outstanding, you know, initiative, but you couldn't get them on board. Now we can with this, make them VIP guests of honor. That'll get them in. You know, now we have a full set of roots. We're able to confirm this event with funds already raised for you at no cost to you. And we're able with a confirmed event to grow the empowerment tree. So what we say is help us plant the roots so we can grow your empowerment tree. So we work with them now to get to the confirmed event level. Now we can go off to the races because when we go to, the next steps for venue, for local sponsors, for publicity and awareness, they all know this is a confirmed event. We're not just, this isn't a pipe dream. We're not trying to get you on board. Maybe we will. What do you think of this idea? No, it's on. This event is on. We can give you assurances, the assurances you need to join, you know, you can't go to a venue in Montreal and says, hey, you know, we want to have it here. Like maybe, no. They want to know. You know, hey, don't waste our time. We're interested, but, you know, we need to know this is really going to happen. So from you helping us plant the roots, we can now grow your empowerment tree. And when you go to jazzforpeace.org, you see that tree. You can click on it and you can click on each branch. See what we mean by publicity and awareness. Click on branch tree and all of that stuff. To see our testimonials, and that's insane. I mean, if you saw this testimonials, you wouldn't believe how gaslit we are as a world if you looked at the list of testimonials. Because here's testimonials from hundreds and hundreds of organizations who we've helped, you know, in our own way. Some people are going to help, you know, more on the fundraising end than the publicity end, vice versa. But, it, you know, the whole thing is it's a unique empowerment tree.
Right.
And that page is jazzerpiece.wordpress.com/about. And that page is, you know, because we have so much information, that will have also the empowerment tree, but also the lists of well-known people who have spoken about Jazzerpiece and all of our grant recipients. So, you know, that's what I said. By doing that, we're eliminating a situation where you're using music for all the wrong reasons, which you're absolutely right. Music is big time used, you know, as a tool to, you know what I mean? A tool for moneyed interest.
Yeah. No, for sure. And that's so important. And one of the things you and I had talked about offline, because you shared that Tibetan story with me with the camel, the weeping camel, which I think is powerful. But there's an aspect of when you and I first connected, we also talked about music helping with mental health. So, you know, we've touched on the ability of music to bring people together, perhaps even turn people against each other. But there is also that whole notion of people that are struggling with mental health and how music can be a reprieve. Why do you feel, and I mean, we've covered a lot of it already, but why do you feel that is the case? Like, what about music outside of what we've already discussed can help people overcome so many of their struggles and, you know, find that reprieve, find peace when they're able to tune into their favorite style of music or just a song for that matter.
Well, if you look at, you know, they've done studies on people, and one thing they've done a lot is interview elderly people on their last days. And those people, they put music so far above everything else. You know, there are like a handful of things, and one of them is their relationships with other people, their friendships. Most of them, when they ask them what their regrets are, you know, they'll say they regret the time they didn't spend enough time with their relationships and enough time with this. And music is such a big thing in these old folks' homes or whatever. It brings people to life. You know, it's almost like you see all of a sudden you see a bloom happen amongst that inside. And music is so incredibly important that you find that not only does it affect people listening to music and all that, but even with mental health, I think you could go crazy a lot easier without music and without playing music yourself, you know, because even if you study music and play music yourself and you have a musical instrument, that's a safe space where you can, you know, be with your thoughts. You can go into a meditative state. I use it a lot for meditational types of activities. Yeah. There's so many ways. And, you know, with an instrument, you're sitting there with an instrument, but you can go into history. You can go into, you know, I mean, I remember as a little kid, I was playing, you know, a piece by Chopin, and I literally felt myself through those notes going into the 1800s, you know what I mean? Yeah. You live into his life and a journey. And it's just such a healthy process, a healing process, and it will counter that which is, you know, making you more and more debilitated. And you're going the other way now. I think it is perhaps even an absolutely essential tool towards maintaining health and staving off mental disability. Not to mention the constant stimulator to the intellect.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely something there, and it's powerful. And I mean, there's a reason why humans created music, right? Like, it's not something that we just stumbled upon randomly. I think there was a lot of perhaps thought and evolutionary aspect there of music and some of the instruments we were able to build as humans. So there is a lot of power there. Rick, I thank you for coming on here, and I really love your passion, not only in the work you do, but the difference you want to make. You know, for listeners that do want to learn a lot more about Jazz for Peace and the work you're doing, and if they want to be a part of it, how can they find you or some of the ways they can become a part of the initiatives you're putting together?
You know, one of the best things they could do is watch your podcast, right? Watch the show. And you should have enough just from this discussion. You've heard some jazz. You should have enough right there. Just write a little email to info@jazzforpeace.org about your honest thoughts. It could just be whatever. Honesty comes out of you. It could be a sentence. It could be two words, or it could be a small little paragraph. And that is the best way to start with Jazz for Peace, because in all honesty, believe it or not, that is a seedling. As you know, a tree, you know, a thousand seedlings will fall off a tree, and maybe only some of them will grow. But that is a seedling for an empowerment tree. And with that, we now have, see, with your comment, not only do you know who we are, we know who you are, because we can see the genuineness in you, the intelligence and the human, although we see those qualities in just your little comment. You see what I mean? And that, so now we know each other, we can start working towards something or whatever. You know, I would love for, because I mean, I've had such wonderful experiences in Montreal before Jazz for Peace. I would love to, I'd love to see the first Jazz for Peace concert in the history of Montreal take place, or Quebec, or, you know, somewhere in that region. That would be fantastic. So who knows what could happen, but that's the best way, just to comment to info@jazzforpeace.org. Of course, As we mentioned, jazzforpeace.org is our website. You're welcome to go there. There's a little video called How to Get a Grant in 3.5 Minutes. That's really cool for people to watch. And there's rickdelarada.com, you know, that kind of stuff. And you can find us, of course, as you know, on YouTube and, you know, Vimeo and all those places.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there was something in Montreal. So I just want to clarify, I came back from Montreal yesterday. I was there visiting, but I'm there quite frequently because my family's there and that's where I grew up. But I'm in Calgary. So not a huge jazz scene here, but definitely we have one little jazz club. But jazz is something that I enjoy. So I would love to see how we can bring it to the community here, or whether it's in Montreal, I'd definitely go visit. But
Calgary's even better, because as you know, we've been to Africa 9 times. We've been to Lahore, Pakistan. We've been to the south of India. So Jazz for Peace, I mean, what we really do is grow a rose in the desert in terms of jazz. So we love to bring, you know, Jazz for Peace to a place that would have no chance at experiencing something like this, which would be, you know, or a little chance, which would be Calgary, would be, you know, a lot less. I mean, I played at a jazz festival in another part of Canada, maybe on the west side. Where is Calgary? Is it way over west or what?
It is fairly west, yeah. So it's next to Vancouver. Vancouver's fairly so we've got British Columbia that's in the west, and Vancouver is in the province of British Columbia. And then Alberta is the next province over, and Calgary is in Alberta in the southern part of Alberta.
Okay, got it. No, that would be just as good, in all honesty.
Yeah. No, I'll get my people together and we'll see what what we can do, and definitely bring it here. But you know, like I said, I really, really appreciate your passion, and you know, it's obvious in terms of the work you're doing and the change you want to bring about in the world. So, you know, I admire that, and thank you for all the work you're doing. And I really appreciated you coming on here, sharing your story, but also a piece of your art with us. So that means a lot, Rick. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Had a great time.
Thank you for checking out this episode with Rick. As always, please leave a review or a comment in the comment section. I always love hearing from you. And if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do so. That's the best and easiest way to support the podcast. Thank you, and until next week.